class today? Before we begin, are there comments, questions, concerns, or other things for me? All right, couple announcements. I don't recall if I made this one before or not. Homework 7 isn't happening. The snow days and so on, we just pushed it so there wasn't enough time. So homework 6 will be the last homework. Also, on Friday, the game development class is having a game expo. You are all invited if you wish. You can go on the lecture notes and see more about the details about when and where. But the people that have been working in that senior level course to design games are having an expo. You can come play games, apparently as door prizes or something. Anyway, so that's going to be on Friday. Yeah, I think that's the announcement.
What you said about homework?
Sorry, somebody asked a question, but I couldn't hear it because everybody else was talking. Sorry, could we please be quiet? And then somebody raised their hand so I can tell who's talking and listen to you. There was a question. Somebody had a question. Somebody had a question, but nobody knows what it was. I don't know what it was.
They wanted you to repeat what the homework.
Oh, what did I say about the homework? I said the homework 7 won't happen. That's what I said. That's up. We snow days and so on, we just didn't have enough time left. So homework 7 has been canceled. Any other questions, things I should address? Okay. So the past 4 lectures have not been in the textbook, as we've talked about analyzing good and bad codes. We talked about searching, a little bit about sorting, binary search, okay? Now we're jumping back into the textbook, but we're skipping several chapters. We're now in chapter 15 of the textbook about recursion. Okay, so let's start off with one of my favorite definitions of recursion. A recursive definition is a definition which is recursive. Okay, so this is intended to be a joke, but that's all right. Anyway, so recursion means defined in terms of itself. Okay, so this recursive definition is a recursive definition because to understand the definition, you have to already understand what recursive means, right? And there's lots of different kinds of recursion. So one of the simplest kinds of recursion is a recursive definition. So, for example, we can define a stack of turtles. A stack of turtles can be defined as is a turtle on top of a stack of turtles. This is a recursive definition. I'm defining what I mean by a stack of turtles in terms of a stack of turtles. And this one actually makes some progress unlike the previous one, in the sense that if I look at something, I can tell you whether or not it meets this definition. I can tell you whether there's a turtle on top of, a turtle on top of, a turtle on top of, and so on. I can sort of unroll what this means. Okay? We can also define methods recursively. And that's what we're going to talk about for the next 3 class periods and in lab this week. Talk about how we can make methods. Methods are defining how to do something. We can have a method defined how to do something in terms of how to do that same thing. So, let's just jump right in with an example. Okay? Public static int. Let's actually do factorial. Okay. What is the factorial of n?
Factorial.
Sorry? All right, what's the factorial of 1?
1.
Factorial of 2?
2.
Factorial of 3?
6.
Factorial of 720? Really big number, but we know exactly what number it is. Okay? In particular, the factorial of n is going to be n times the factorial of n minus 1. Okay? Here I have a recursive definition of factorial. Let's just return that. Okay? So the factorial of 3 is 6. Why is it 6? Because it's 3 times the factorial of 2. And factorial of 4 is 24. Yes, 24, because that's 4 times the factorial of 3, and so on. This is the definition of factorial. A definition of factorial. Defined in terms of itself. And as we can see, because this compiles, we have no red squigglies, this is valid Java. Okay? However, it won't work. We'll see that here in a moment. So system.out.println. Let's do the factorial of 5, which, if I remember right, is 120. Okay? If I try to get the factorial of 5 using this method, I will get a lot of error messages. Okay? You get what's called a stack overflow error. And that's because I never said when to stop. Just like my stack of turtles would have to have an infinite number of turtles to work, because every turtle has to be on top of a stack of turtles. So my factorial method never stops. What's the factorial of 2? Well, it's 2 times the factorial of 1. What's the factorial of 1? Well, it's 1 times the factorial of 0. What's the factorial of 0? It's 0 times the factorial of negative 1. What's the factorial of negative 1? It's negative 1 times the factorial of negative 2. And this will just never stop. We'll always have another negative number to go. So what we do when we're doing this, and we'll make this formal and talk about the rules for this in a moment, but what we have to do is we have to specify when we don't need to be recursive, okay? So the factorial of 0, whether you happen to know it or not, is always just defined to be 1. By definition, the factorial of 0 is 1, okay? So I can say if I get down to 0, the answer is just 1. Otherwise, let's do this recursive bit, okay? Where I find the old factorial, I multiply it by my new number and return that. And now I will get my 120, okay? And now I can also find out what the factorial of larger numbers are, although very quickly it will break, okay? If I remember right, you can't go much higher than this because we start running out of numbers that Java can represent in the small number of bits it allocates for integers. Factorials grow very quickly, okay? Questions about this method before I start taking it apart, talking about its pieces and how we use these to solve problems. Yes? Wouldn't it always just return 1? An excellent question. Clearly no, but why not? Okay? Let's trace what's happening in this method. I'm going to add some println's. System.out.println. I'm going to say that factorial of n was called. Get rid of that. Okay, so I'm just going to print out each time the method was called, what it was called with. And then I'll also print out what it's returning. Okay? So I've not changed anything the method does, I've just made it print out a lot of stuff. So you'll tell me what when the method's called and what it's returning. Okay? And let's start with a nice small number so we can see what happens. I start with 0. And I see that factorial 0 is called, factorial 0 is returning 1. Hopefully this is not surprising. Anybody want me to talk about why this happens with factorial 0? Great. Let's try factorial 1. Now when I call factorial 1, I'll see a slightly more complicated behavior. Let me make a little more space here so we can see what's going on. Factorial 1 was called. Is 1 equal to 0? No, it is not. So the next thing that happens in my code is I multiply 1 by the factorial of 0. So factorial 0 gets called. Factorial 0 returns 1, because that's what happens with factorial 0. And it returns 1 right to this line of code in the invocation of factorial 1. So now I have 1 times 1 is my answer, and so I print out factorial of 1 is returning 1, and 1 comes back. So factorial 1 is using factorial 0 to do its work. Okay? And so both 1 and 0 are invoked. And if I were to continue this, if I were to do, for example, factorial 2, I'll see that 2 invokes 1, 1 invokes 0, 0 returns 1, that 1 is multiplied by 1 to return 1 from factorial 1, that 1 is multiplied by 2 to return 2 from factorial 2, and I finally get my answer. And if I were to go up to a bigger number, I will see this pattern continues, okay? So I see that when I invoke it with 4, 4 calls 3, 3 calls 2, 2 calls 1, 1 calls 0, 0 returns, 1 returns, 2 returns, 3 returns, 4 returns, and I finally get back my answer. Yes? Yes, when I say return, the entire method stops. This invocation of it. Okay? So every time I invoke a method, talked about how Java puts some more new memory on the stack. Okay, it has a big stack of memory for methods. And you can put the same method on that stack as many times as it wants. So when I call factorial 4, memory for factorial 4 gets stacked on top of the memory for main. And then that calls factorial 3, and that gets stacked on top. And then factorial 2 gets stacked on top, and then factorial 1 on top of that, factorial 0 on top of that. Then return stops the currently running method, which was factorial 0. And now we're back at factorial 1, because that's what's left on top of the stack. Factorial 1 returns, we're left with the next thing on the stack, which is factorial 2. Left with 3, left with 4, left with main, we print out the answer. Other questions about that idea? We will play around more with this memory on class on Friday as well. Okay, so I have my factorial method. It's defined in terms of itself, and because of the way that Java handles the memory, that works fine, as long as I have 3 properties. So there's 3 things that every recursive method needs to have in order for it not to blow up and to give us the right answer. So I'm going to list those 3 things, we're going to talk about each of them, and then we're going to see it several times through. So, there are 3 things we need. The first thing we need, you can put these in different orders, but I'm going to use this order. I'm going to say the first thing you need is a recursive invocation. Okay? By definition, a recursive method invokes itself. So if your method does not invoke itself, it is not a recursive method. Okay? So the recursive invocation of our factorial is right here. We're invoking the method itself from within itself. That makes it recursive. Without that, it's not a recursive method. The second thing we need is a what's called the base case. Some condition where the recursion doesn't happen. Okay? The base case in this code is the n equals 0 return 1. There is a way to run this method where we do not recur, where we do not invoke ourselves. That is called the base case. You have to have one of these, otherwise your computer will run out of memory trying to invoke the method forever. Okay? So we always have to have a base case. The third thing we must have, and this is somewhat less obvious, but we must make progress towards the base case. Okay? And that's what this right here does, the factorial of n minus 1. Because it's n minus 1, that will move me closer to the base case. You give me 4, I will call it with 3. That's closer to 0 than 4 was. Okay? And you keep doing this and we'll keep making progress. We'll keep getting closer and closer to that base case, to that condition where we stop recurring and actually start returning values. If you miss any one of these 3, you do not have a successfully running recursive method. It either isn't recursion, if you don't have the recursive case, or it will blow up, it will not halt properly if you're missing either the base case or you're failing to make progress. So every recursive method we write will have these three pieces. So, for a little bit of practice, let's think about what these three parts are. Let's start right here. A stack of turtles is a turtle on top of a stack of turtles. In that line, okay? Let's see if we can identify the three different pieces. One of the pieces is the recursive case, okay? So here, a stack of turtles is recursive, right? We have a stack of turtles defined in time terms of a stack of turtles. That's sort of the recursion in this definition, the recursive part. And we make progress in that we're sort of adding a new turtle, okay? But we do not have in this code a base case. Okay, we're missing one of the pieces that makes this a valid definition of a stack of turtles. So if we wanted to make this a valid recursive definition of a stack of turtles, we could say a stack of turtles is either a turtle on top of a stack of turtles or a turtle on top of a single turtle. Now I've got all three of the pieces. Okay? Now I've got a base case, which does not refer to a stack of turtles. I've got a recursive case, which does refer to a stack of turtles. And I have some sort of making progress. The stack is getting taller. Okay? And any valid recursive definition will have all of these three things, whether it's Java or not. We will always have all three pieces. Otherwise, it doesn't mean much. Or it's not recursive. Okay? All right. So, I'm just going to show a few more examples of these, walk through a few more methods, we'll talk about sort of how they work, then we'll come back and see sort of where this is all leading us. Try to get some pointers for how we can make this work. So, let's make let's do, how about the Fibonacci numbers? Okay. I know what Fibonacci numbers are. I do not know what Fibonacci numbers are. All right, enough of us don't know. We should define the Fibonacci numbers. The Fibonacci sequence is 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, etc. The rule of this sequence is each number is the sum of the two numbers before it. Okay? So 21 is the sum of 8 and 13. And 55 is the sum of 21 and 34. And so on. Okay? Every number is the sum of the two previous numbers in the list. So what we want this method to do is tell us the nth Fibonacci number. Okay? So if we give 0, we'd like to see 1. If we give 1, we'd like to see 1. If we give 2, we'd like to see 2. 3, 3. 4 should give us 5. 5 should give us 8. And so on. We'd like it to just tell us which one of these numbers is it. And we're going to do this recursively. Okay? So, we need three things. We need a recursive invocation, a base case, and we need to make progress. Usually when we write our code, we write the base case first, although we don't have to. Okay? So I'm going to make some sort of base case where I'm going to return who knows what. I'll just put some question marks here. And then otherwise, I'm going to have somewhere a recursive call which is somehow going to make progress. I'm going to return something here too. Okay? Basic structure of my code. Basic structure of all recursive code. If something is true, just return. Otherwise, make some recursive call and then return. So, what's a good base case for the Fibonacci numbers? Any thoughts? Yes. Hope. When it's 1, when what's 1? When n is 1? Or when the answer is 1? Okay, under what conditions is the answer 1? When n is either 0 or 1. So let's just say when n is less than or equal to 1. Okay? And we said the answer there is 1. Okay, so that deals with the first two elements, 0 and 1, both being 1. We could come up with other base cases, but this is a reasonable one. I've got my base case. I now need to make my recursive call. Okay? So if I do not have a small n, if I've got a big n, how do I figure out what my number is? Well, it's going to be the sum of the two previous numbers. So my answer is going to be the sum of the number before this one and the number before that. Okay? So I just take the mathematical definition. Every number is the sum of the two numbers before it, and we start with two ones. I convert that into Java, and ta-da, I have a Fibonacci number. Let's see if this works. Okay, so we said, let's put some indices here so I can see what's supposed to happen. So we're saying here that the ninth Fibonacci number should be 55. And we see that it is indeed 55. Hooray! All right. So that we can see what's happening, let's do something very similar to what we did for factorial with Fibonacci. Okay? So I'm going to put some println when things are called. I'm going to put some println when things return. And since the code actually looks very similar, this println will be very similar. I did that intentionally because it saves me writing so much. Okay? So, what happens when I invoke Fibonacci 9? Lots and lots and lots of stuff. Okay, because we said that Fibonacci 9 is defined in terms of Fibonacci 8, and Fibonacci 8 is defined in terms of Fibonacci 7, and 7 is defined in terms of 6, and 6 is defined in terms of 5, and 5 is defined in terms of 4. It's actually going to be very confusing if we try to do it all at once. So let's, instead of trying to do it all at once, let's do a smaller number. Let's just try Fibonacci 2. We see that 2 calls Fibonacci 1 and Fibonacci 0 and adds together their results. Okay? So 2 calls 1, 1 returns. 2 calls 0, 0 returns. We add together those results. Right on this line, it calls 1 and 0. If I were to invoke it with 3, I see quite a bit more going on. Okay? 3 needs to invoke 2. But 2 has to invoke 1 and 0. So 2 invokes 1 and 0. 2's done. Then 3 also needs to invoke, in addition to 2, it also needs to invoke 1. So 1 gets called and returns. So we end up doing a lot of work. There's a lot of stuff going on to compare Fibonacci numbers, including calling 1 multiple times. Okay? This is sometimes the case when you're designing recursive methods. They're sometimes inefficient like this. We'll talk some, depending on time, we may get to it today, we may probably not until Friday, about sort of how to make this work more effectively. But the idea is I just write down the definition, mathematical definition, and even if Java has to do a huge amount of work to get the answers, even if it has to call thousands of calls, eventually it will do the right thing, because I just wrote in my code the mathematical definition, that recursive definition of what I am looking for. Questions? Okay. Let's look at least one more. Let's look at one that takes the sum of a list starting at some index. Okay? So the goal of this method, goal, find sum of list from I to the end of the list. I want to add together everything that's in that list from I to the end of the list. This looks silly, We'll talk about why I do this here in a moment. Okay? Now, we could do this with a loop, and we'll see the loop version of it in just a moment. But let's start with the recursive version. What is a base case? If I want to find the sum of a list, what's sort of the easiest problem I could possibly, easiest list I could possibly find the sum of? Yeah?
The last number in the list.
The last number in the list. Okay, so that is if I is equal to the list's length minus 1. Is that right? So if I only want to add together that last number, I could just return it. There actually is an even simpler one, but this will do just fine. A base case. No extra work to do. You've only got one number. I'll just tell you what it is. Okay? Then I also want a recursive case. So if there's more than one element, what should I do? Well, I know I need to invoke sum again. So I know I'm going to have some invocation of sum. It's going to use the same list, but I need to make some kind of progress, so I will probably change somehow. Okay, and I also need to do some work. I actually need to do what is right. So the concept here is the sum of the elements of a list is the first value plus the sum of the rest of the list. Okay, so we're just going to say it's the first value or the first value we're interested in plus the sum of the rest of the list. Okay. A recursive definition of the sum of the elements in the list, starting at index I for some arbitrary I. So we can see if this works too. Let's make ourselves a list, and then let's just print out the sum of that list. Let's start at index 0 for starters. Okay. And we will see that it claims that this list has a sum of 29, which 10, 15, yeah, that's right, 29 is the correct answer. Hooray! Okay. And all I did is I just defined the sum of the list to be the first element of the list plus the sum of the rest of the list. And poof, it works. Questions? Okay, now, something to know about recursion. You can always trade between a loop and recursion. This is always possible. Okay? So there's also a different way to get this sum, which is just a for loop. For int j equals I, j is less than list length, j plus equals 1. I'm going to have some answer here. Oops. And then I just do answer plus equals the list sub j. Okay? I've got two different methods of doing my sum here. I've got the recursive one and the one that uses a loop. And they do essentially the same thing. They just add all the elements one at a time. Both of them do that. Okay? There's nothing special about the way one does it over the other. But one of them does it using recursion, and one of them does it using a loop. They actually do almost exactly the same computation. We can make that even clearer if we change our base case just a little bit. Okay? So if we change our base case to return 0 when we go past the end of the list, then now we've got almost exactly the same behavior. The recursive case is going to keep invoking the method until it gets to the end of the list. It's going to have a 0, and it's going to start adding the rest of the elements back onto the list. Just like here, we start with a 0, and we add all the elements onto the list. So does the recursive one. They're doing the same work. Okay? They're doing it in different ways. It's different ways of thinking about the problem. And we could rewrite all of these other methods as a loop as well. Sometimes this is easier than others. For Fibonacci, it's not as obvious how we do this. We have to do two things, two recursive calls, so a simple loop doesn't work. We'd have to store slightly more information. Sometimes it gets really complicated. But the basic idea here is just that I define a method in terms of itself. Okay. I'm about to just sort of move into a slightly more applied topic here. So, before I do that, I would like to know what you are confused about with recursion. You've had altogether 26 minutes of recursion. That isn't a long time. What is still vague? So turn to your neighbors and come up with some questions. We'll field some questions about recursion. Then we'll answer those questions and see where we get from there. All right, so questions. Yes?
How is this different from for or while loop? When is it better to use one or two?
Any other questions? Does it?
Is there a commonly diagrammed simple recursion method on paper?
Other question? Yeah. Can you edit strings?
That's a really good way to think about how to get to like that first person phrase.
Anything else we should address? Okay. Let's start with the easiest ones of these to answer. So I'm going to rearrange these a little bit. Do we use it outside of methods? No. This is a slight exaggeration. There are also recursive classes. Okay. So we actually saw one of these earlier. I think we had... Now I'm going to forget which section we did which in. We had some. Is this the class? I think we had a person who has a boss that's another person. That's a recursive definition of person, right? One of the fields of a person is another person. But usually when we say recursion in CS, we mean methods. We don't mean data. So in general, if we're talking about recursion, we're talking about a recursive method in the entire field of computer science, software engineering, information systems as a whole. That's what we mean, okay? We use concepts of recursive definitions other places, but when we're talking about recursion, we mean methods. Let's actually go to this one next. Is there a common way to draw out what they are doing? Common. Hard to answer that. But I'll show you two methods we could use. Well, three. One is we could actually draw all the memory boxes. This is slow. Because there'll be lots and lots and lots of them for recursion. Okay? So there are a couple of shortcuts. And let's talk about one of those shortcuts, okay? So let me make myself here some other place that I could do stuff. All right. Which of our recursive methods would you like to see diagrammed?
Factorial.
Okay. So, factorial. Let's do factorial of 6. Okay? What I'm going to show you is officially called contextual small step semantics. That doesn't matter at all. We're just going to rewrite stuff, okay? What I'm just going to do is I'm just going to write a series of lines, and I'm just going to rewrite the interesting part of the previous line. So, factorial of 6 was defined to return n times the factorial of n minus 1, okay? So factorial of 6 is defined to be the same thing as 6 times the factorial of 5. That's what I'm returning, okay? But if I think about this line of code here, well, that's just the same thing as 6 times, and then that's 5 times the factorial of 4, right? That's the definition of factorial 6, okay? Now, commonly when we're doing this, we don't write every piece, okay? So then I would do something like saying, well, that's the same thing as 4 times the factorial of 3, and that's the same thing as 3 times the factorial of 2, and that's the same thing as 2 times the factorial of 1, and that's the same thing as 1 times the factorial of 0, and that's the same thing as 1, okay? So I just sort of write it out. It's actually more common on paper to write it going up instead of down. I don't know why. Okay. But the idea here is I just keep rewriting the recursive call until it's gone. It will be gone eventually because there's a base case. Okay. And then what's my answer? My answer is all of the stuff that is left over. So I've still got the 6 times the 5 times the 4 times the 3 times the 2 times the 1 times the 1. That's my answer. Okay. And this is a common way of trying to figure out what will a recursive method do. One common way. Another common way is sort of the table approach, okay? So this is sort of we just rewrite it until it all goes away. There's also the table approach. So let's try that with, how about Fibonacci? Okay? So what I'll do is I'll make a table. I'll have one column for n, and I'll have another column for the answer. Okay? And then I just start filling in numbers. Okay? I can go forward or backward. Let's work backwards, okay? So, the answer for 9. What is its answer? I don't know until I know the answers for 8 and 7. I don't know the answer for 8 or 7 until I know the answers for 6, and I don't know that until I know 5. And so in the end, this is not a great example to do backward. Let's do forward first. 0. I know the answer is 1. 1. I know the answer is 1. 2. I know the answer is the sum of answers 0 and 1. Okay? So I write 0, 0 plus 1 equals, 1 plus 1 equals 2. Okay? 3. I know that's going to be the sums of the 1 and 2 entries, so that's going to be 1 plus 2, which is going to equal 3. 4. It's going to be the 2 plus 3, which equals 5, okay? And every point along the way, the idea is I just put another row in here and I answer it in terms of the rows I already have. If I need a row that's not there, let's suppose I forgot to write 5, I ask what's 6, okay? I'm missing a row. Something is missing from my column here. And so I'm going to have to add that row I need, right? I know this is going to be 5 plus the Fibonacci of 5. But I don't know what the Fibonacci of 5 is, so I better write 5 and find out that 5 is going to be the 3 plus the 5, going to be 8. Okay, so that's going to be 3 plus 8. 5 plus 8, which is going to be my 13. Another common way of figuring out, without running it, what your recursive code is going to do. Questions about either of these? Yes? It is the value of the integer. Okay? So, where I have n times factorial of n minus 1, if n was 5, then that's 5 times factorial of 4. So maybe I'm not sure what you're asking.
So it's not like the number of the value, it's not the index of that value, it is the value.
It is the parameter. The parameter doesn't have to have any obvious correlation to what I'm trying to do. Just like the 5 doesn't have any obvious correlation to 8 in the Fibonacci sequence. It's just a number I picked. In factorial, it does have a much more obvious correlation, just how I define it, right? So it's whatever value comes in. I mean, Java is stupid. It doesn't know what I'm trying to do. It just knows what I said to do, okay? So now I say, you give me an n, and I give you n times the factorial of n minus that one. Java has no idea what n means. It's just some number you gave me. And it just does stupidly exactly what is written down, whatever that happens to be. In particular, this will so break, okay? Let's see another version of this. Let's suppose I were to give it -3. It would just stupidly do exactly what I said. And it would do 3 times the factorial of -4, because that's what I told it to do, right? And then, what is 3 times the factorial of -4? Well, that's going to be -4 times the factorial of -5. Okay? And it's just going to keep doing this ad infinitum. Okay? And it will never stop because I will never hit the base case. It just does what I told it to do. And we could see that if I gave it a negative number, it would give me a stack overflow error because it would run out of memory to keep drawing these diagrams. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions about these diagrams in any way? Okay. Let me say 2 things about these diagrams. One is, it's worth your while practicing thinking about this. The book, chapter 15, has several recursive methods. It has both of these and a few others as well. I would encourage you to go and try diagramming that yourself and see what you can get. Also, when you're writing recursive code, as you will in lab tomorrow, and as you probably will a little bit on final, it's worthwhile diagramming out your own code and seeing if it's doing what you think it's doing. Particularly, you'll be able to figure out if you're not making progress or you don't have a base case or something, because you'll have to write it down and you'll see, oops, I did the wrong thing. Okay, diagrams. How are recursion and loops different? Loops work all in one chunk of memory. I've got one piece of memory, one set of variables, and they work primarily by changing the values of variables. Okay? So when I look at a loop here, I see that I am changing the value of j. It keeps changing, and that's what means the loop will eventually terminate. Some box keeps getting new values put in it. Recursion doesn't do that. Recursion instead just keeps putting more new memory on top. Okay? So you can sort of think, this may be helpful, this may not. Recursion is sort of how you would do this if you had a pen with no eraser. And loops is how you do it if you do have an eraser. Right? For a loop to work, you have to keep erasing the value in the box J and putting in a new box, new value. For recursion, I just keep grabbing a new piece of paper and covering up what I had before. I never have to erase anything. This turns out to have all kinds of interesting implications for language design and the theory behind it. Not as interesting for us as programmers. The other major difference we have comes when we're doing 2 recursions. Okay? 2 recursions for a loop is really hard. Loops do one thing after another and then they're done. Loops trying to do 2 things after one and then 2 things after each of those doesn't work real well. It's really hard to make it to do that. So recursion is more natural, more common in these cases. They're sort of branching. They're splitting the work into pieces and doing both of the pieces or all of the pieces independently. So there's sort of more flexibility for recursion. You can make that recursion work in a loop. It's just harder. Loops tend to be faster. If you can write both codes, loop tends to be faster because it doesn't keep putting new memory into place. I don't know. Anybody want me to speak more about their difference? I suspect that you will have to write both recursive and loop code for some time before the difference clicks. So initially, when I want you to write recursive, I will say write recursive. When I want you to write loop, I will say write loop. And if I don't say you're welcome to pick either one, you'll probably pick loop because you've done that more. Eventually, that will all click together as you write more of these. So when is recursion or loops better? Recursion is better for branching stuff. split the work in half. Okay? Loops are better for single pass stuff. That's very vague and fuzzy. And again, we'll typically try to tell you which one you want to do. Let's come back up to, is there a good way to think of the recursive phrase? How do you come up with the recursive definition of something? Ask yourself, if I had someone else do most of the work, what would I have them do? Okay. So suppose I want to make the smallest possible contribution to, I don't know, sorting a list. What's the smallest piece I could do? If I have a gigantic stack of things I need to be sorted and I want to do the smallest amount of actual work that I could possibly do, what would that smallest amount of work be? Or what would I have somebody else do and leave me almost no work left? And however we answer this question suggests recursion. So, anybody have suggestions? How would I take the smallest amount of work I could possibly do out of sorting a list? Yeah?
Find the smallest number yourself.
Okay, so I'll grab the smallest number and I'll say sort the rest of the list. Okay? So I might say, all I want to do, so let's take the example sorting. I want to just find the smallest value. So that means the rest of the work. So then the recursion is sort the rest of the list. All but the smallest. Okay? This is the kind of thought process will give you a recursive definition for most things. There are many correct answers, and sometimes I don't really want the smallest. Sometimes I want to say what's half the work, okay? Turns out you can sort lists faster if I sort half the list, you sort half the list, and then we put them together. But in general, you can get a recursive definition by sort of saying what's the smallest piece that contributes what's left. Okay. Can it work with non-ints, and can you edit strings with recursion? Yes, it works for non-ints, and you can never edit strings. They're immutable, but you can create new strings. I've mentioned this before, but let's look at CodingBat, because this is a good place to go in our last few minutes here. If we go to codingbat.com, we've mentioned this before, you will see there are two whole sets about recursion. And if I look at these, I will see that many of them, for example, count 7, is working on integers, but if I look at, for example, count x, it's working on strings. And there are methods there that work on strings in various ways. I don't have a lot of time to go through an example of that. You'll get to work on strings in LAM tomorrow. I would encourage you to look at CodingBat and do this some. We'll come back and talk more about how this works when we come back on Friday. I will see you all then.